chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them, but we are here to eviscerate them. Welcome to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. I'm your host, Janelle Walker. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing.
Great. Welcome everybody to the show this week. Every week is a very special episode to me. This week we have stumbled into our very first special episode on grief and the mashup rom-com, the grief mashup rom-com, a genre that I did not know I would hate so much. And to discuss it with me is a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Becky Mezzanotte Blizzard. Becky, could you introduce yourself to the people?
Hi, I'm Becky. I actually work in the live events industry. I work particularly, I used to work in programming and content coordination for a lot of very large comic cons. And now I work in marketing for a lot of very large anime conventions. Yes, I have a real job. Yes, this is a real job, I promise. It doesn't sound like it. It never sounds like it. So do that. I spend a lot of time watching a lot of hockey because that's my life now. A lot of hockey and a lot of figure skating anymore. But also because, like, hockey boys are so dumb and I love them so much.
They're dumb and they're sweet and they're all in love with each other.
They are. They really are just totally in love with each other. And I love it so much.
Speaking of love. Yeah. This film, the film we're talking about this week, Becky recommended this. It's called P.S. I Love You, the year of our Lord 2007. And I'm going to read a summary of it. Here we go.
Sure.
Here's your plot summary. When Jerry, played by Gerard Butler, the husband of Holly Kennedy, played by Hilary Swank, dies from an illness, she loses the love of her life. Knowing how hard Holly will take his death, Jerry plans ahead. Beginning on her 30th birthday, she receives the first in a series of letters written by him, designed to ease her grief and encourage her to move forward to a new life. Okay, Becky. So this is what Google says this movie is about, but I need to hear from you what this movie is really about. What is this movie really about?
I mean, look, I'm not gonna lie, I love this movie. I really, really do. And this movie really does have a lot to do with death and moving on. That is very much a part of it. But there's also this rom-com sort of in there as well. To be fair, it is based on a book, so I'm sure that it's probably slightly less jarring if you're reading it. It's probably a little more well plotted, I would say. As opposed to the movie where sort of it feels a little shoehorned. There's a love story in the midst of a, like, oh, we're getting over the loss of a love type thing. So I think it's trying to be a film about grief, but it's not always succeeding in being a film about grief.
I think you're 100% right about that. And I think maybe let's dive into what that random shoehorned rom-com is, because I think you're right. I think in the book, this is probably much more lovingly rendered. But
yeah,
in the film, it does sort of feel like, hey, people don't really know what to do with a fanciful movie about a woman who's trying to grieve. So let's try and make this a rom-com with Harry Connick Jr. So let's get into that, since the plot topic there, the plot summary doesn't cover it at all. What is that romantic comedy, Becky? What happens?
Yeah, so you've got sort of this, like, I totally forgot that was Harry Connick Jr.
I know, when I saw him, I was like, what are you doing in this movie?
I forgot that was him, like, entirely. Like, I'm going to be real, I totally blocked him from my memory on that. Like, that tells you something right there, when you entirely forget an entire character exists in the movie that you really love.
Yeah.
Right, so you've got him who is sort of, you got Harry Connick Jr.'s character who's, what is his name?
Daniel. His name is Daniel.
Daniel, right, Daniel. Daniel, who is, like, vaguely in love, sort of, maybe, kind of, who's looking for his own love story within this plot line. And then you've got that plot line that goes through, and then you have Hilary Swank's second love story. So as she's trying to get over the loss of her husband, to which you're getting their relationship in flashback form, by the way, you're also getting a new love story that starts when she, just to give you some outline of the plot, part of the letter journey that she goes on, leads her out to Ireland, where she meets her husband's parents. And while she's out there and she's having a time with her girlfriends in Ireland, she stumbles across William is his name. I was like, what is his name? His name is William.
Yes, William, played by the very handsome Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
In one of the only roles where I'm not like, gross.
I know, he's very cute in this.
He's very cute in this. And I was like, it's probably... But yeah, so she ends up seeing him in a bar playing in a band, and she ends up sleeping with him. And then she comes to find out, spoilers, that he knows her husband, or her former husband, her late husband, I guess is the way to say that.
And she does find this out after they sleep together, which is such a weird bed trick. And there are so many weird bed tricks in rom-coms. It's a thing.
It's a really, really weird one, particularly because, like, after he says he was just like, oh no, you're Jerry's Holly, she's like, wait a minute, who are you? And I'm like, you didn't have this conversation first?
Also, Becky, he says that he was there the night she and Jerry met, so how did he not recognize her?
Right.
Like what kind of fucked up shit is that?
Exactly. Like, how did you not know? Like, it's very, very weird in that regard. And that's why I'm just like, I'm sure that there is an attempt. It's probably better well written in the book. It feels very shoehorned in here because I'm just like, no, 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 that's not, that's just not logical to me.
Well, and in a story about grief, it's sort of, especially, okay, so let's talk about the form of the rom-com. As we talk about on the show sometimes, the general form of the rom-com is you have a couple or couples that are trying to get together, and there are rom-com hijinks getting in their way.
Always.
So that being said, that means that this movie is about Hilary Swank's character trying to get together and move on with mystery new guy number one, and the obstacle is her dead husband, which is troubling.
Correct. And I honestly feel like that's sort of what the downfall of this movie is, honestly. I think if this were just, like, I think the concept of this film, of it being like her husband has died and he's written her letters to get her through the year and he's trying to help her move on, I think that's a really, really great way to grieve and a really, really great way to, like, for her to try and help her move on, because it does take a while and it is not easy. I'm speaking personally from some personal experience right now. It just sucks.
Grief. It is garbage. Cannot recommend.
Yes, it is garbage. Cannot recommend. Not at all. But at the same time, throwing in this rom-com sort of love interest in there, shoehorning it in as it is, I feel it sort of almost invalidates the point of the movie entirely.
So. And so what do we think the point of the movie is? It is that grief. It's that reconciling the loss of her husband. And I mean, I think that the trip to Ireland, which, heads up guys, our first travel rom-com, get excited. The trip to Ireland could have been, as you say, a much more sort of like beautiful time to reflect and get to know her husband's parents. But then, it ends up being a place where she like hooks up with a new guy and her girlfriends get mad at her. And also, like, can we talk about the relationship with her and her girlfriends where, like, what, she has two girlfriends, of course, because every girl has two friends.
Exactly. Only two. There's never more than that. Always two.
Always two. The one friend gets pregnant, the other one gets married, and then she just gets, like, jealous, and then her friends get mad at her, even though she's still grieving. Can we reflect on that?
Yeah. In some ways, I get where her friends are coming from, but at the same time, I'm like, girls, it is hard to get over yourself when you're grieving. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just hard.
Yeah, she's a widow at 30. I mean, that's... Yeah. so difficult.
It's extremely difficult. Like, I mean, grief makes you do weird things anyway. And so I'm like, honestly, I think she's doing rather amazingly if what she's looking for, if like she's able to get herself out of bed in the morning and sort of able to just sort of even remotely function as a person.
Yeah, and that is sort of a recurring motif where her friends and her family are trying, like, saying, hey, girl, get up on your feet, get out of bed, you know, put those shoes on and put on a nice dress and go out. And I just kept thinking, like, you guys, she's really dealing with something. I mean, he didn't just, like, die. He died suddenly. He died young. I mean, that's a lot to reckon with. And then you have, like, her friends getting her to go out and get drunk and see Harry Connick Jr. And then Harry Connick Jr. like gets mad at her for not being over her dead husband, which feels totally unfair.
It's extremely unfair. Like, people don't get over things that quickly. It's just not realistic.
Yeah, I mean, when you're grieving in real life, like, your friends can be like the pillar of your life. They can be that cornerstone. Right. And in this movie, they're like, put on some lipstick and get over it.
Right. They really are. And it's sort of, it's a detriment, I think, to this, like I said, to this otherwise, like, I was like, I love this concept of this film. And I do really love this film. But there's just so many problems with it. Yeah, it's like, and that's one of them. Like, the way the people in her life react to her problems is just, it's I guess maybe in some ways it's realistic, but it's just sort of, it feels wrong.
I also wonder, Becky, since you are coming at this from a place of, like, loving this movie and having seen it several times, what do you think about Holly as a character? Because I have to say, I don't think I was quite ready for what Hilary Swank is bringing in this movie in terms of characterization for Holly. So what do you think about her?
As a character, Holly is sort of, she feels very much, at least throughout, like, the very beginning of the film. I think part of this is it's a transformation film for her, because I feel like at the beginning, she doesn't have much of a personality at all. I feel like her entire personality was wrapped up in the fact that she was married so young. And so she doesn't have a whole lot beyond, I got married really young and my mother hates it, and that's my personality. That's where I feel like she is. And I feel like later on, she sort of gets more of a personality.
And also, how did Kathy Bates get into this movie? I mean, I just kept thinking, like, this cast is, like, kind of amazing.
This cast is really absurdly good.
Like, a really weird script. But, like you said, interesting script, interesting structure, but weird.
Right. Right.
The costume design was bad. Can we talk about that? I'm sorry. I know it was 2007, but the costumes were bad.
Majority of the costumes were bad. I will tell you that. I have one defense of costumes, and it's like, I'm just like, it's not even a defense. It's more that I'm just like, the dress that she wears when she goes out for her birthday, I just want that dress. That's my only, that literally is my defense. It's just, I want that dress.
Right. Everything else was sort of like the bargain for a TJ Maxx in 2006.
But I think for the most part, she's kind of, in some ways, she's kind of flat. There's just not much to her.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I actually thought watching it, especially in that first scene, because the film opens up with a scene of Hilary Swank's Holly and Gerard Butler's Jerry fighting before he passed away, obviously. And as the scene kept going on, I was exactly like you said, waiting for sort of the specificity of her character to come out. And eventually I was just like, oh my God, she's like, so I have this way of describing Bella Swan in Twilight, and it's that she's a cardboard cutout with no face, so the reader can stick their face in the hole where her face should be.
Exactly.
And I sort of feel like that's what Holly is.
She is. She's very much a blank slate for you to project who you are onto her. She's supposed to be this character. Like, it's very much that she is supposed to be this character where you are like, ah, I've been in that fight before. I know that fight.
Yep.
She's not really meant for anything else.
Because she's not coherent as a character, because like you said, they start out swinging by saying like, oh, wow, this is a girl who's like kind of impulsive and kind of lives on the edge. She got married at 19 to a guy she just met in Ireland. Like, that's right. Pretty
while
wild.
She was on a while she was on a study abroad trip.
And then later she's like wearing these like wide headbands and like little pearl earrings and like, you know, houndstooth coats. I'm like, who is this mom from Connecticut? I don't, who are these, how do these two people exist in the same body?
Right. Right. And like, it's one of those things where it's like, I understand that you're supposed to expect like, okay, well over time people like get older and they mature. And I'm like, in some ways,
yeah,
but like, as somebody who married the person that they've been dating since they were 18, uh-huh. you do change a little bit, but you don't change all that much, I don't think. I'm like, I feel like my husband would argue that I'm still as nutty as I was when he met me, maybe if not even more so now.
And that's why he married you.
Oh, it's definitely why he married me, because he definitely wanted to hear about all of the hockey boys and all of the K-pop stuff. That's exactly what it was.
It's just, that was a bonus. That was a bonus.
It was a bonus for him.
The other thing about Holly, though, that I think is so interesting, that is so consistent with other rom-coms, is that she doesn't know what she wants in her career. That feels very consistent with rom-coms, I feel like. Because she starts out working in real estate, and then she's doing, like, shoe art by the end of the movie. Guys, I'm not kidding. She's doing shoe art. Yep.
She takes a class and learns how to make shoes. Because that's how she reconciles with her best friend.
Through shoes. Oh, my God. The postmodern feminist in me is like, oh, God, no. Oh, no. The female friendship is bonded by shoes.
It's bonded by shoes. She's going to make her shoes. They're going to be one of a kind because she's designed them.
Well, and okay, so here's another thing that's interesting about her is that in the beginning, they set up this whole thing where she and Jerry, their big fight is about having kids.
It is. Correct.
What do you think about that thread of the film, about her reluctance? And it seems like eventual sort of like non-interest in having kids, because I feel like that is a really intriguing and subversive part of the movie that I wish that I saw more about.
I sort of feel like it's a little bit like, it's very common. So like, it's not a special argument of any kind. It's a standard, stereotypical. And I feel like you find it in a lot of sort of rom-com type stuff about an argument about kids.
I just found it interesting that she was the one who is not really interested in kids, because I feel like in the other rom-coms I've watched, and I haven't watched that many to be fair, I tend to avoid them. But I feel like the story tends to be that it's like a woman who's trying to find love so she can settle down and have kids. And the guy's I don't want to settle down. I don't want to have kids.
I mean, yeah, that is very true. I don't know. I guess I relate to her in that way because I don't want kids at all. So in some ways it's sort of interesting. I mean, I guess in that way it does sort of throw the stereotypical rom-com on its head. I think the thing that always gets me about it, though, is that I'm just like, they have this argument about having kids. I'm pretty sure that there's a deleted scene that I've seen with, because I own the DVD of this movie.
Ooh, tell us the tea about the deleted scenes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm like, I want to say there's a deleted scene in there where they actually, like, talk a little, there's a little bit more, and I'm pretty sure it got cut because it makes the story, it changes some things. Because we were talking about how it was like, we talk about like how Jerry's death is very sudden and very sort of like it happens when he's young. But if I'm not mistaken, like there's a deleted scene and it shows that like his like dying process it's not short. It's very sort of, it was sort of a little more drawn out than is indicated throughout most of the other parts of the film, which is, I'm pretty sure why this scene got cut in general. Because if I'm not mistaken, I haven't watched that particular. I don't watch a lot of the deleted scenes a lot of the time. I do sometimes, but I haven't in a while. But with that in mind, this argument makes a lot more sense as to why he is arguing for children. He knows, even if it's not immediate, there's a vague sort of like, what happens to me? Something should live on.
I wish the film had made that more clear, because I think that would have felt a lot more emotionally satisfying, because as it is, it sort of just leaves it as a thread where we are left to wonder, okay, so is Holly going to have kids? Is she going to pursue that domestic life? Because then at the end, I mean, she pursues shoe art while her friends get married and have children respectively. So I was left thinking like, oh, so she's going to like electively just like embrace being a widow and not have kids and not marry again and just like do her damn thing, which I respect, I have to say.
Well, do you know that they're making a sequel to this movie?
What? Okay, what? Okay, tell us everything.
There is a sequel to this movie coming out.
Secret sequel?
Secret sequel! Yeah.
That is so wild. This movie came out 13 years ago.
Right! It did. And they really started talking about it. They started about talking about a sequel back in February, about doing one. And Hilary Swank is going to be in it again. It's called Postscript. Postscript picks up where Holly's story picks up Holly's story 7 years after her husband's death, when Holly's sister, so remember her sister who had been all over the world gallivanting, her sister apparently now has a podcast, and she asks her to tell the P.S. I Love You story letters on her podcast.
Oh, well, that sounds nice. And then I'm sure like Jeffrey Dean Morgan's going to hear it, and then he's going to like come find her.
Right. I'm sure it's going to be something along those lines of some kind of thing. So yeah, some like spoilers, there's a sequel.
This is great.
13 years later, there's a sequel.
Because everybody was waiting on pins and needles for the P.S. I Love You sequel.
I think I might have been the only person
you
waiting.
You were the one.
This was me.
Was for you.
It was me.
It was for you. I appreciate that they're pursuing the Jeffrey Dean Morgan relationship, but I have to say that I was more interested in whatever the fuck was happening with her and Harry Connick Jr. because that... Okay, Becky, am I wrong in feeling like they were saying he was on the autism spectrum? Is that what they were trying to say? Because for people who haven't seen the movie, he describes himself as, quote unquote, not having a filter and, quote unquote, having a condition that makes it difficult for him to socialize and, quote unquote, taking pills for it. And while that's not accurate to people's experiences of being on the autism spectrum, that's what I thought they were getting at.
I couldn't tell, like, I honestly, I had written it off entirely because I just sort of, like I said, this is a character I entirely, like, remember wiped from my brain.
It is that bad. Everyone should know.
I don't remember much about what Daniel, which is Harry Connick Jr.'s character, I don't remember much about him until you, like, brought him up. And I was like, oh, right, he exists in this movie. I just forgot. I think it was... partially that they were maybe trying to hint at he was slightly on the autistic spectrum, but also that I thought that maybe they were just trying to go with he's a little bit of a drunk.
That is so weird. That like that whole thing left such a bad taste in my mouth, and his like, I'm in love with you, and her being like, that's nice, I want to be your friend, and he would keep saying like, I'm in love with you though, and she would be like, let's have lunch instead.
Right. Yeah. It's a very, very uncomfortable relationship between them.
Yes, and how they, that scene where she sort of just, like, takes it as a sign from her late husband, Jerry, that she should try to get with him, yeah, and they meet up at Yankee Stadium.
Yes, yeah, yeah, and she gets there, and yeah, and then they kiss, and then she's just like, nope, nope.
I literally screamed out loud and said, like, why did you make me watch this plot? Why? What was the point of it if it was going to end like that?
Yeah, it's once again, I feel like it was once again another piece of like a shoehorned romantic comedy piece thrown into this, where they tried to like make it you're not standard, you know, oh, she gets a sign from her dead husband and then she goes and she's and he's the one. They tried to not do that, but in the process, they missed the mark entirely.
Right, because it could have been a great sort of subversion of the classic rom-com, exactly. But it just doesn't work. It's just not charming. It's not fun.
I don't think they set Daniel up to be a likable character to start with, which is part of the problem. Like, they've made him this extremely awkward character, and he's just... he's not really likable to start with. I feel like if he had been more of the more like boy next door type, where he was genuinely very nice and genuinely just sort of always overlooked, it would be different and it would feel different. But because they've given him, this character where he is, well, I'm a strange, I'm an oddball, but I'm not an oddball in any kind of lovable way.
He's, I don't even know how you would describe him. He's like a bitter oddball, like just not good.
Life has just not been kind to him, which is why I'm like, I think he's a little bit of a drunk. Because life has just not been terribly kind to him. And you can see it in the way he acts around everybody.
Yes, and Holly even is also kind of weird. Like, she's a little bit... she's a little bit strange for a rom-com main character, which isn't a bad thing, but she just... the way Hilary Swank plays her is kind of, like, dorky.
That gets a little bit of a pass from me, but only because, like, grief does weird things to people. We don't know what she looks like... like, we don't have a good indicator of what she looks like normally. The most we have from her of what she looks like normally, quote unquote, is the very, very beginning when she is arguing with Jerry, with Gerard Butler's character, and they're having an argument about, you know, the kids. You've got that. And then you only have her in, like, snippets of flashbacks. And that's our only real indicator of what is she like on a normal scale. Everything else is post is like post death, so all grief basically.
Well, so as we wrap up here, then maybe we can end on a note of that, which is like the thing that this movie offers, as you said, is that it does open up a space for thinking about love in the context of grief.
Yeah,
and I think that that's a really nice thing that a rom-com should pursue. Maybe not in this form, exactly, but I think it's a beautiful thing. And maybe is there anything like you would want to say about what you loved about this movie the first time you saw it?
So honestly, what I loved about this movie the first time I saw it was actually the structure of it. I love that most of this story is told. Is partially told by a main character who is not there. And that's what really sticks with me, which is why I'm like, I love this movie a lot. That's particularly why. I hand wave a lot of things where I'm just like, we're going to hand wave these two shoehorned in romantic comedy plots. Because I love the way that the story is told by, like, her getting these letters and how it actually helps her move forward.
Well, I think it's time for us to move forward too and wrap up the show. But before we move on completely, much like Holly, we have to give some due respect to our loved ones who are not here in the studio with us. And those are our patrons, our beloved patrons. Emily, Sean, Esther, Bob, Robert, we thank you so much for supporting the show in the way that you do. It means a lot. It means that we can keep doing this and stay in touch with our friends and with you and keep bringing you silly rom-com content to your ear holes. So thank you so much for your support. All right, Becky, it's my favorite part of every week.
Sure.
We're talking about our antidotes.
Okay.
What is the antidote that you would like to offer for P.S. I Love You, a film that you, in fact, love?
Right. So, to be fair, like I said, I do really love this movie. But if you're looking for something, I think that deals with death, particularly, I think, in something a little bit different. So my antidote for this is actually a movie on Netflix that you can find. It's called Dumplin'. And it deals with the death of an aunt. And I think it deals with it in an entirely different way, but also told in flashback form in some ways. So some similarities, but also I just think it handles it in a way, sort of a different way. Yeah, I was like, I wanted to give you all something that was like, I think that P.S. I Love You, I love this movie, but you can't watch it all the time because it really does, it hits a lot of heart pangs. And I think that Dumplin' does a little bit of a better job of dealing with death and grief in a different way.
Lovely. I am going in a different direction, as I always do. And I'm going to offer up another book about grief in large part, I think. That is in large part about love and grief. And that is my favorite Bronte novel, Wuthering Heights. In this case, we have a main character mourning the death of their love, but it is not a woman mourning the death, but a man. It is Heathcliff mourning the loss of his childhood sweetheart and soulmate, Kathy. And she also appears as a ghost, which Jerry does often in the film. And I think it's a beautiful, torrid love story. It's very dark. It's very moody. And it's also set in the British Isles. So it has a lot of similarities to P.S. I Love You. It is not lighthearted like Dumplin', but it is really, really fun. I would say it's a great rainy day quarantine read. That's my antidote. Well, Becky, thank you for coming on and talking about this movie that you love. It's really nice to talk to someone about a movie that they like. There's something kind of fun about that.
Yeah, no, like I said, I was like, I mean, we as you know, as I've mentioned several times to a lot of people, like, I tend to like rom-coms. I tend to like to also pick them apart, but I tend to just in general like them because I don't have to pay a whole lot of attention to them.
Yeah, not paying attention feels like a really good feeling right now. Well, thank you, Becky.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. If you liked this episode, make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Rom-Com Killjoys. And if you'd like to support us further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys to gain access to exclusive bonus content. Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog. And the song you're listening to now is a cover of one of my favorites, Baby Love, by Colin Langanis. Remember, Killjoys, don't let anyone kill your joy. Not a rom-com, not me, not anyone. See you next time. Okay, we're gonna start recording now. Fuck it, do it in post.